Hello and good evening. I'm Sharad Kutan, and you're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the digital day. Last weekend, the DAP had party elections, so it electing Puchong MP Gobind Singh Veeyo, Penang Chief Chow Kong Yao, and Seremban MP Anthony Lok to the party's top leadership. This is after Lim Guan Eng stepped down as Secretary General after a maximum of 3 terms. Now, what does all these shifts in leadership mean for the direction of the party and its ambitions in the years to come? Howard Lee, outgoing DAPC Youth Chief and Assemblyman for Pasir Panji in Perak, joins us today on the show to help us understand where the DAP is. Thank you so much, Howard, for joining me tonight. I want to begin with the retirement of party veteran Lim Kit Siang from politics, and use that as a way of understanding how the DAP is shifting in its approach to politics. Lim Kit Siang, an extraordinarily charismatic leader of the DAP for now decades, does his retirement signal in many ways a new direction for the party?
Thank you for your invitation. Pleasure as always. I think I would like to take it in a slightly different direction. I see right now, rather than the taking of a different direction or with the retirement of Kit Siang as the key focus, I'm seeing it as a widening of the top tier leadership of the party. And of course, what you mentioned just now with those that you mentioned in new positions, a renewed leadership. We're also looking at a higher prominence being given to the parliamentary leader position that has been appointed Saudarang Ah Kor Ming, the former parliamentary deputy speaker, now given the role or elected into the role of the parliamentary leader of the DAP. Now, with this widening of the top tier leadership, I think it shows the widening of the party's appeal. It shows the widening of the party's base, the widening of the entire notion of DAP. So rather than seeing a transition from a charismatic-based appeal into something what some have said technocratic, it's actually a widening, including the charisma being an attraction, technocratic approach as another, but it's also, you know, a much larger, wider, mass-based movement than what it used to be.
Okay, that's interesting that you say that, but you know, in this party elections, you also lost individuals like Ong Kian Ming, who was deputy minister at Miti, he's the Bangi MP, Tony Pua, a man credited with the MOU at least to this at this point, still exists between Pakatan Harapan and the current administration. Do those signal something to, are those red flags about where the party sees some of its weakness? Does it see some of the technocrats as actually liabilities rather than assets in the years to come?
I think I would steer away from questioning the decision that's been made by the delegates. The party is the delegate and the delegate is the party. And of course, these are signals. How we interpret these signals, I think we leave it for the days and the months and the years to come. However, I think people like Tony, who has said it very, very aptly himself, despite the fact that he feels he's been rejected by the party in his posting, I feel that it gives him, it doesn't mean that he doesn't have the room or he's denied the space to continue doing what he's doing as a normal member. I mean, the same way that you mentioned just now, I'm the outgoing deputy chief, but actually I'm the outgone deputy chief. As of Saturday, I'm no longer the deputy chief. And in fact, I didn't make it, I didn't make the cut for the 30. Does that mean I've been rejected? No. Does that mean I do not have a platform to continue to serve the party? No. We will continue to serve the party, and I'm sure Tony has given his commitment. Kian Ming is still an MP. I'm still an elected official. I think, you know, the party is going into a complete, I mean, the country is going into uncharted waters. or some say we've gone full circle, because there are people now saying that we may need to put our focus on denying BN their two-thirds majority or denying absolute power to BN. So we may be going back to the scenario where we saw in 2008, the only option that we had was to shout at the top of our lungs to deny BN two-thirds majority. So it will require every single one of us with or without experience, with or without positions, to go all out in returning to a position of confidence amongst the electorate. Okay. And I want to stress the return of confidence. It's not just about to the party, but towards democracy itself, which is very, very touch and go right now.
Right. I'd like to come back to that issue, but I do want to, and I know you put a kind of generous spin on, the decisions made by the delegates, but in many ways, do the delegates reflect the voters, the voter base of the DAP that have had to deal with several major decisions, leaving behind the logo, adopting Pakatan Harapan's logo, and, kind of like submerging the identity of the party into, subordinating it to something larger. Is that something that that rankles, at the core identity of the DAP supporter, who's for many years never had the ambition of gaining state power? They've always been that voice of dissent in the Malaysian landscape, and is that what they still want? They want the strong dissenting voice, and that's why the MOU, as strategic or as intellectually grounded as it may be, still wasn't something that could be sold to the DAP base.
Yeah, I find it quite interesting that you said subordination to the larger agenda, and in fact, that is precisely what we're doing. And if one was to be in the room yesterday during the debates, yes, there were suggestions, and yes, there were some loud cries for us to go it alone. But if we were to really quantifiably look at the voices of for this subordination to larger agenda, i.e. still sticking to the coalition model of Pakatan Harapan versus the go it alone, the subordination to larger agenda was by far the louder and more, I would say, a numerous voice, okay? And of course, we've always been one that celebrates plurality, not just in everything, but plurality in views. But when the party made the decision, when the delegates have decided on a leadership, and it would seem that the party, that the new leadership is by and large a continuation of the previous larger agenda, a subordination to that larger agenda is the only thing we must do and can do. Now,
Howard, I want to ask you, do you think, and this, give us a sense of your perspective on party politics, how much should the party reflect the ground, or to what extent should it leave the ground? It doesn't have to go forward even when its own ground is resisting that move. I mean, is there...
I don't think the ground per se is resisting. There are voices of resistance which may or may not be the entire ground. And based on what we saw yesterday, especially those delegates, the by and large voice is to still be part of Pakatan Harapan. Okay, so that must be clarified and made clear. Okay, and of course, your first question was, to what extent should the leadership lead, or should the ground lead the or inform the leadership? It's a two-way thing, but I think at this precise juncture, where as I said, it's kind of pretty much uncharted waters, I think leadership should do just that, to lead.
Okay, and then Howard, this is very quickly. A look at the lineup. I mean, women. There are more women in the central leadership now, but it's still perhaps not as great as it could be. It's not. I don't believe it's 30% yet. And also non-Chinese members of the DAP. Does DAP still have a problem in that regard, the ethnic and gender diversity?
I think, I just have to correct you there, constitutionally we are bound to have 1/3, which is basically more than 30%, it's 33%. So of the entire Central Executive Committee, it is mandated by the Constitution, so it is more than 30% women, okay? And I must admit, it was a little bit disappointing to see a lacking in elected non-Chinese officials within the Central Executive Committee. I must admit that. I must admit
that. Help us understand. Why hasn't it? Because you have some excellent members of the DAP who are non-Chinese. Why is it that they're having a hard time getting support from the party?
I think one of the key, I would say, excuse or one of the key reasons, of course, I can't empirically say that these are facts because I don't have the figures in front of me. I think, quite frankly, the delegates may or may not know yet some of the leaders who are non-Chinese, okay? And it would be disingenuous. It would be disingenuous for me to say otherwise. Whether it's those candidates lacking in footprint in getting themselves known, or it's simply muscle memory, or whether it's just pure and simple internal politics. You know, I don't want to use the word warlordism, but essentially you've got pockets of votes that will support certain candidates. And those who may not be those, it just so happened that those who have banks of votes are still those who don't have votes are the non, sorry, let me come back to that. Those who don't have banks of votes are Malays, and quite frankly, that's the fact. And those who do have banks of votes happen to be Chinese and maybe some Indians. And that's, you know, brought us to this particular situation. But nonetheless, in the co-option that has happened, constitutionally, we can co-opt up to 10. 5 have been co-opted, and I think that has at least closed the gap that needs to be filled in terms of representation, in terms of ethnicity.
Okay, I don't want to kind of like belabor this point. I know Gobind Singh Deo was one of the highest vote getters in the party, but and maybe that's also a reflection of, you know, his own genealogy. I mean, the son of Kalpra Singh. But are there people in the DAP who want the DAP to be much more Chinese in identifying or sort of characterizing its party, you know, identity? That this is core. There's nothing to be shameful about. The DAP is, in some sense, the champion of the Chinese community in Malaysia. Are there people like that in the party still?
I think what I can say to that is the current circumstances, certainly is a reflection of the last 60 years, where ethnic minorities, i.e. the non-Malays, would feel like their existence as fully fledged Malaysians being threatened. They seek representation and leadership from that position of minority. Okay, let's acknowledge that, and that being, whether it's a fact or it's a sentiment, is something that is felt by a large, by and large, Malaysians who happen to not be Malay. And DAP has been able to fill that void, to be able to appease that insecurity through our long-strong struggle up until now. But does that mean that we are a party of minorities? No, we are a party for all Malaysians. And of course, it's being able to close that gap between a party for all Malaysians who speaks for all, and to be the representation and also the voice of the minorities. They don't have to be zero-sum games. In fact, they are, but they are complementary and anything but, you know, conflicting agendas. So if we can combine these two, but also close the gap, I think that is what we need to really work on right now.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more of this conversation in a couple of minutes. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Howard Lee, outgoing Deputy Youth Chief and Assemblyman for Pasir Panji in Perak. We're just talking about the recently concluded JP Party Congress. Howard, help us understand what are the political imperatives of the future. You suggested that the denial of a two-thirds majority to Barisan Nasional is going to be utmost on the agenda. But we also had Lim Guan Eng saying that, you know, any cooperation with Perikatan Nasional is off the table because of that betrayal that happened over the Sheraton move. But for a lot of pundits, the successes that Perikatan Bersatu have had in the last couple of state elections suggest that in many ways, they have more in common with Pakatan Harapan than they do with their erstwhile allies, UMNO and Barisan Nasional. So why put that off the table? Why not consider some sort of alliance or coalition with Perikatan in pursuit of denying Barisan Nasional a two-thirds majority?
The only permanence in politics is its fluidity, right? However, I think one must realize that at this current juncture, in fact, it's actually beyond the betrayal. It's more, I mean, let's talk about a potential electoral pact, okay? Let's open our minds, an electoral pact with Perikatan Nasional. My view is, in seats like Pagoh, where Muhyiddin is the incumbent, and will more than likely Perikatan Nasional will want to contest, will Pakatan Harapan be able to even stomach the notion of seeding for Perikatan to contest that seat? Much more closer to home, the deputy president of Bersatu, stroke Perikatan Nasional, Tambun, the former Menteri Besar that was removed unceremoniously, will PKR or DAP or Amanah or Pakatan Harapan be able to see to let go of that seat and let him go uncontested? I think these questions, the only answer is a big no. Now, if on this fundamental basis of even on the minimalistic approach of an electoral pact, we can't answer, I think it's very difficult for us to explore. Let's go one step further. Let's talk about potentially an agenda-based cooperation, policy-based. And I think these are things that we've already explored previously and were rejected outright when Bersatu was part of PH previously. So I think it's going to be extremely difficult to even explore that. But nonetheless, if let's say, for example, DAP yesterday, we've gone through a leadership transition and change, okay, with the new trajectory that the party is going to take with its new leadership. Now, when there's a change of leadership, there will be changes in how the party is going to move forward. Perhaps if there is a change of leadership in Perikatan Nasional and even its components, I haven't even touched on Perikatan Nasional having PAS in it, right? If there's a change in its composition, if there's a change in its leadership, perhaps the door will be open, which is currently shut. I'm not saying, and we are not closing out any possibilities, but as it stands with the current situation, it will be very difficult.
Right, but aren't the numbers suggesting that if the greater evil, as well, the greater enemy, is Barisan Nasional, because it is unreconstructed and it will, revert to type, and it hasn't been able to get rid of, members in its ranks who are corrupt, and basically they will return Malaysia to a pre-2018 scenario of governance. Is it the most pragmatic thing to link up with Perikatan Nasional?
It is pragmatic, but is it doable? Is it achievable? Okay, before we look at whether or not we want to go down that path, we need to look at the feasibility of it, right? We all want, the pie in the sky, but if, it's too far up in the sky and you don't have a plane, how are you going to get there? Okay, but okay, let's look at the pie in the sky. Let's put the primary objective, lesser of two evils, denying BN two-thirds majority. What is more impossible than taking the country into a different direction if we think back to 2008 than to be in government? in 2008, it was nigh on impossible to deny two-thirds majority, let alone take a few states. But somehow, somewhat, the different dynamics that came last minute or that came suddenly brought us to power in five states. So I think, as I said in my first remark, the only permanence in politics is its fluidity. Things are always fluid. And, you know, let's look at the infighting that's happening within UMNO. Look at the things that are happening between UMNO and between PAS and PRIKASAN. All these are different factors of fluidity. I think what DAP and Harapan needs to do right now is to get our own house in order, get our own agenda in check and ready for the people. And, you know, let's quit talking about...
Let's talk about that. So we have a couple of minutes left. One thing is winning power. The other thing is governing. And I think when you look back at the 22 months, there were some shortfalls in governance. And we see that also at the state level. Is the party attracting the kind of talent that not only can win power, but it can also govern in a kind of, you know, in a way that brings the conversations around governance forwards rather than, you know, kind of fall into the templates that the Barisan Nasional has bequeathed Malaysia?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm in total agreement with you. I think we are quite lucky in some sense that we are still attracting new talent, people who have been tested within the party and also people who have proven themselves out in the field as servants of the people. I think we can say with full confidence that in Johor, the candidates that we put forward, both those who won and who lost, there is a fair representation of new faces. So I think in terms of bringing in new talent, both from the corporate world and from the SME world, from NGOs, I think we are still privileged as a coalition who is able to bring in new faces and new talent. With that as the basis, I think I must bring it back to the point I wanted to make just now, which is unity of the opposition is something that we can achieve. But I think what more important is to achieve a unity in vision and a unity in mission, which is to, number one, get the people behind the message of let's come out to vote, get the vote out. Because I made this comment yesterday, which is the fact that the dissatisfaction and the demotivation to vote, that is the fundamental largest advantage that BN will have, that UMNO will have. They are, you know, in Malacca, the people didn't want an election, they did it. In Johor, they didn't want an election, they did it. Because they feel that the more they demotivate the voters, the more of a role that their voting machinery will play in bringing them victory. So I think what we need to do primarily now is to reinstill confidence in the people to come out to vote by telling them, if you don't come out to vote, if you are demotivated by these plays and that is being put forth by BN is going to be the ultimate winner. So come to vote, and then we, PH, need to sort our houses out.
Okay, one very quick question. What will be the clincher? Will the issue of democracy writ large be enough to get people out of their homes? We now know with automatic registration, the real deficit in voter participation all these decades, which have been hidden from view. Millions of Malaysians do not participate, but never participate in the electoral system because of malapportionment, which really has reduced this their vote to a meaningless number. How do you convince them now to come out?
I think in order for us to achieve what I said, which is to re-motivate those who are demotivated or to motivate who was never motivated in the first place, is I think we need to be clear in what we are offering as a coalition. We need to offer a united front. We need to be able to offer a clarity of message. We need to be able to offer talent in administration and governance, both in what we say and what we do. We need to be able to lead this confidence rebuilding exercise. And I think, you know, the people, the grassroots, the national state, and state level leaderships, especially in those states that we are in government, we need to be able to show that we are doing what it takes in government and also in opposition. And I think clarity and unity of message in the leadership of the opposition parties that are together will be able to be reflected, will hopefully be able to bring through that unity of message and mission amongst the electorate. And I think it's about getting things done right now.
Right. Thank you so much, Howard, for being on the show tonight.
Thank you. Cheers. Pleasure is always.
Outgoing deputy youth chief and assemblyman for Fateh Panji in Kerala is ending our show tonight. I'm Sharad Kutin. This is Considered It, only on Astro.